Welcome to the Curators Podcast, where we take a deep dive into the issues of the 2024 election and the solutions proposed by Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Hey, everybody. This is Paul with the Curators Podcast. Welcome. I am here with my co-hosts, Brenda and Johnny. Johnny is back with us. And Brenda, I know you're friends with our special guest today, Kim Conti. Kim is the founder of the national nonprofit Non-Toxic Neighborhoods, a director of Jane Goodall's Roots and Shoots, a board member of the HERD Foundation, that's H-E-R-D, HERD, certified in organic land management, North American UN committee member for the Children's Right to a Healthy Environment Council, former City of Irvine Commissioner. In November 2015, Kim helped launch a campaign to raise awareness of the City of Irvine's pesticide use and worked with city staff to help the City of Irvine adopt a historic and award-winning organic landscaping policy in February of 2016. Since then, Kim has assisted over 200 cities, counties, and school districts in banning glyphosate and taking organic and regenerative policies online, including the first statewide glyphosate ban in New York. Kim has proven that you can have beautiful parks, athletic fields, and open spaces without synthetic pesticides. That is a very impressive bio that I just read, folks. And Kim, it is our honor to have you with us today. So welcome.
Thank you for having me, you guys.
You know, people hope to find their calling in life, and it certainly seems as though you found yours, and so many of us are benefiting because of it. So I just want to extend my own personal heartfelt thanks to you and for all the work you've done and what it may unleash in the world, something desperately needed. I'd like to ask you, if you don't mind, how you personally experienced life in a way that led you to this work.
It was actually baseball. Baseball in Bermuda is how I left the world of traditional advertising and became a soil nerd and advocate for organic and regenerative management, specifically where our children play. We were lucky enough to call Bermuda home, and it was a beautiful island. It was not a progressive island by any means, but when we were living there with our two little ones that insisted on playing baseball and everyone else is playing rugby and cricket, the country had banned all use of Roundup and also obviously importing Roundup. And that was a wake up call for me. I also think it was really important to live in a country where you have the benefit of the precautionary principle. So simple home and personal care products, foods, everything else was regulated in a way following the precautionary principle. So even if I went into a store to purchase an American brand, it was not allowed to contain parabens and other chemicals. So it was a really good moment to be a young mom and really kind of understand what these impacts are to our children. So when Bermuda banned Roundup, we were on our way to California, where I just assumed, since California is, you know, I thought more progressive, everybody's eating organic food and surfing when they can. And just to find out that they were utilizing Roundup at my son's elementary school on the turf to mark a little running track for them to go out and do 100 mile club. So at that point, I realized we had to work with the school district and work with the city as well, because a lot of the schools' playgrounds backed up to a city field. So we wanted to approach it and tackle it all at the same time. It's not like pesticides respect boundaries, you know? So we took that on, and I had never had to meet with an elected official. I don't think, obviously, there was any reason to. I think until there's something that is important to you or threatens the safety of something or someone you love, the environment, then you kind of find your way and navigate it. So we requested meetings with our elected officials and they met with us. I mean, to be honest, I really didn't know what the process was and how accessible your local officials were. So that was very positive.
What year was this, Kim?
This was in 2015. Mm-hmm. So we are still fighting the fight. We've learned a lot. There's been a lot of trial and error. We admittedly went organic by neglect when the policy went live because we did not really know what we were asking for other than safe parks and playgrounds and places for our children to play and to not be exposed to known carcinogens. And way back then, we didn't have hardly any of the mounting peer-reviewed research that we have today on the dangers of glyphosate. Glyphosate, we've learned, is, you know, the poster child Roundup. Glyphosate is the active ingredient in it, is, you know, the most, I think, well-known herbicide that people have connected to these, you know, multi-billion dollar lawsuits and judgments being awarded to folks. Just recently, the man in Pennsylvania who won a $2.25 billion judgment because of his cancer. They shared that Bayer, formerly Monsanto, did not warn users about the dangers.
Right. I want to invite Johnny into this conversation here because I've had a couple of conversations with you, Johnny, about some of the issues that Kim is touching on, particularly surrounding glyphosate, and how in other parts of the world, the same ingredients that we are freely given here and that are even forced upon us are banned in those countries. Would you care to expand on that or ask him about that?
Yeah, this glyphosate, it's just incredible how toxic it is and how pervasive it is and how, yeah, there seems to be so little action. So I just, I'm very, very appreciative for the work you've been doing, Kim. I think it's incredible. And yeah, so sorely needed. Yeah, this glyphosate is an antibiotic. It's a carcinogen. It's an endocrine disruptor and it chelates our nutrients. And yeah, there's thousands of studies that show its toxicity, and there's studies that show that even just a tiny bit of it can really be damaging. So yeah, I think this is incredible work you're doing and something that needs to be built upon. I'm really stoked. You know, I heard there about, you know, you getting it banned all the way across New York. I wanted to ask you about that. How did that work out? How did you get that implemented? It's really great.
To be honest, we were a little surprised that it happened. We thought there would be a lot more pushback, but I think timing was on our side. Cuomo at the time was in some hot water. So I think this kind of gave him a positive focus away from what he was in trouble for. We've seen much heavier opposition at the county level, specifically in California, because of all of the agriculture. And one thing New York has that California and the southern U.S. do not have is they have the luxury of a dormant season. So a lot of folks that get four seasons that, you know, the kids are lucky enough to get snow days, they get a break in this constant exposure, where in warmer climates, we're getting exposure constantly. And the more we've worked in this space, the more we have found the dependence of chemical land management. And a lot of the folks that are working on that or behind that, linked to that, aren't understanding the unintended consequences. You know, like it's scary stuff. But we, in New York, we work with Linda Rosenthal, on this effort, and she was great and didn't allow the legislation to be watered down. We work really closely with ag and our farmers to make sure that they were prepared for this coming online. And we just, again, when we work with municipalities and school districts, we don't blame anybody. We know that the narrative that they always hear from distributors in the chemical industry is that these chemicals are tools. We're here to share that they're not tools. They are designed to kill. They're all sides. So we just focus on getting them everything they could possibly need to control pest pressure in the landscape. And again, going organic by neglect was, a big piece of this journey where we share, sometimes sharing what doesn't work is almost as valuable as what is effective. So from rodenticides, rodent control, we have ContraPest that sterilizes both the male and female rodents, and it's extremely effective while not harming the non-target species. And herbicides, we became like bartenders with these chemicals because we needed to make sure that our contractors believed in this. When we were working with merchants, the landscaper that already had the city contract for City of Irvine, Edgar, he's a good friend now, but he told us, we thought he was kidding. He said, "Look, if this is around 3 years from now, I'm in." And he wasn't kidding. Literally to the day, 3 years later, he saw that his business increased, working with contractors, training them in this helps them grow their business. And they've seen that switching to organic controls is just as effective. And in many cases, it's a lot more fiscally sound because it's less input intensive. Our goal is to heal the soil. So we need the system to work together, where these chemicals, it's brilliant. From if you look at Bayer, Dow, Syngenta, they've built a system that the turf is dependent on synthetic nitrogen because the soil is so depleted and dead and compact. And then you need all of the herbicides, which utilizing glyphosate and these other controls are actually creating additional weed pressure. So it's the perfect kind of environment for future weed pressure. So then you really do become chemically dependent. If you want your grass green and to grow in sterile, dead dirt, then you need to use a high nitrogen input, and it just, you're locked in. So when we work to transition an athletic field or park, we take soil samples. So the goal is, where are we with the soil? What's the health of the soil? And then we go from there. And then once you heal the soil, it naturally chokes out a majority of the weed pressure. And that is something that the chemical companies can't benefit from because you don't need inputs or anything like that. I mean, we definitely work to inoculate the soil if it needs some nutrition, but a lot of it just ending the constant application of pre-emergence, synthetic, all synthetic, but you have pre-emergence, selective herbicides, post-emergence, and Roundup is a non-selective. And that is all probably very boring to you guys. It's just a constant assault of chemicals.
On the contrary, and allow me to say, it sounds like, Kim, that they're creating the problem, and then they're offering a solution to the problem, which profits them. It reminds me of several other industries, which we won't go into today. But that we talk about these things, and I was talking with Karen Lorre, an actress on one of our podcasts last week. And she was talking about the destruction of the soil and the microbiome in the soil, and how that then in any hard rain, that soil will erode into the rivers, the streams, the bodies of water, and create all kinds of marine life problems. I'm sure you have experience with that. But one of my other questions for you would be, how long does it take for that dead soil that's so reliant on these chemical companies to have any product? How long would it take to regenerate to a healthy soil? Do we know?
So, real quick on the waterfront, Will Harris, who I love, he's the holistic rancher in Georgia. He's got a very thick accent. I joke that you need subtitles to understand what he's saying sometimes. But he got this, he captured this beautiful, I mean, and also unfortunate, but beautiful example of a rain event on his property where you had a creek where his land is regeneratively maintained and he's introduced all the animals back in. It's just this beautiful success story. But his neighbor, Mr. Conventional Farmer, the water from Will's ranch versus the conventional ranch was just black and white what you needed to see. You saw how brown, and I know Kiss the Ground is, they've captured a similar event where you just see the loss of soil. We can't lose any more soil like this in this manner. And it shows how it impacts our waterways and everything else. So I think the water piece is a big one, and we can't afford to lose, our topsoil. We have to heal it. And on the speed of healing, we worked with the city of Costa Mesa in California, and we were working with staff and two landscape contractors. They love to give us when we, I think we're past doing pilot parks, but in the beginning, we would do pilot parks to demonstrate proof of concept to show the benefits. Because again, a lot of city staff, they are tasked to maintain the parks to a certain aesthetic. They are constantly told organics don't work, that it's cost prohibitive. So we go in to demonstrate the benefits. So we take our soil samples, we take drone shots, we collect baseline data. And the original program was supposed to last 12 months. We were in 2.5 months, and staff bought into it. They loved it. They saw the turf conditions improve. They saw the compaction. We thought it was an irrigation system error. It was just actually the compaction of the soil was so dead, it wouldn't absorb anything. And that's where a lot of the runoff came from. So
Wow.
once you heal the soil, it acts like a sponge. And in Southern California, water is a big expense. So we were able to save a lot of money on irrigation. So 3 month mark, we wrote an organic policy together, and it was added to the consent calendar to the city council, and they adopted the organic policy with a unanimous vote, and it's been great since then. So it can happen really quickly. It's just having staff understand that they have the tools they need, they have a support system in place, because none of these guys want to be using Roundup around children and our pets. They just need to be educated on the alternatives, but then also a lot of them need to be made aware of the dangers.
Kim,
Wow.
I wanted to ask there. Go ahead, Brenda.
Let Brenda jump in for a sec. Go ahead, Brenda. Thanks,
Yeah,
John.
Kim, I wanted to ask you, everything you're talking about, I think a lot of our listeners know this is so prevalent talking about regen organic agriculture, but it's the same for like parks. We're talking about soil health. I've talked about your organization with a few people that I know, and they were so surprised to find out that all of these chemicals are being sprayed on parks, in schools. As you know, I used to live in Los Angeles, not too far from where you lived, and I'm in Florida now. Every week on the road medians, they have the backpack sprayers, and they're spraying weeds. And I've mentioned it to people around the condo where I live. They have no idea that this stuff is being sprayed. They just think it's some sort of like harmless fertilizer or something. Have you found that like most people are just shocked to know what the municipalities and schools are using? Or have you found by this time, do a lot of people understand that this problem is happening?
Well, I think there's a mix. I think people are just trusting. They trust that if a school or a city is using something around the most vulnerable population, that it's been proven safe to do so. We know that's not the case. I had no idea that, I was letting my boys play baseball on fields that are commonly treated with Roundup and Speed Zone. Speed Zone is one of the most kind of unheard of and dangerous pesticides out there. The active ingredient's 2,4-D, and it's 50% of what makes up Agent Orange. And this is sprayed directly onto the turf or onto the brick dust where our children, pets, and people come in direct contact with, our pollinators come in contact with. So,
That's a good point about the pets. I mean, people are walking their dogs and their dogs are like eating the, sniffing around on the grass directly with their mouths and licking their paws.
and if you're like pet owners like we are, Bella and our bonus doggy Huckleberry are allowed on all of our furniture and in our bed. So that's exposure. And with 2,4-D, unfortunately, it does not break down. So if your dog comes in contact with Speed Zone 2,4-D in the park, on his or her paws and comes inside the house, if it's in the carpet or anything where there's no direct sunlight, it will stay active for up to 12 months in your home. So it's just people aren't understanding all of the different exposure points we experience in a day. Just where you guys go today. Like, are you going to a parking lot where they just sprayed all of the medians and the sidewalks and the cracks? They spray Roundup on sport courts, garden beds, fence lines. And per the Department of Pesticide Regulation, these applications will stay volatile for up to 48 hours. Other chemicals like dicamba off gas constantly. So it's just this chemical soup that we need safeguards from. And with the agriculture piece and the food we consume, that's one huge part of it. But if you look at all of the maintained parks, your neighbor's yard, just people not knowing the dangers. Yeah, we go to Home Depot and my husband, see someone walk by with a jug of Roundup and he knows I'm gonna go talk he's
Right.
like, please don't. But a lot of people are unaware because Roundup, I mean, there's still commercials. Roundup, they share that it's safe. And even on their website right now, if you go to Bayer's website, they have outdated information stating that their classification of glyphosate was in 2020 is still accurate, but that is not the case at all. So they're misinforming people. They're misinforming people that are going to make an educated decision. And that's what they should be held accountable for.
Johnny.
Are you guys familiar? One huge piece that we did not have back in 2015, 2016, and really why we're seeing so much pressure from industry, and we're really at this crossroads, is because the Environmental Protection Agency came out with a draft biological paper on the impacts of glyphosate to our endangered species, both plants and animals. And they stated that 93% of the total list of endangered species, plants and animals, are harmed or killed by glyphosate exposure. And because of that, the Ninth Circuit rejected EPA's position on their classification for glyphosate. So it really has changed everything. Not to mention the EPA has made it a final report. They didn't announce it. Like they want to keep it a secret. And the only reason why they did that is because our partners, NRDC, legally went after them for not sharing this data. So they were forced to share this information. And this information is now undeniable. You have Wildlife Conservation Board, which is a funding agency, funding projects that utilize glyphosate and habitat restoration. That's nonsensical. And now we have research to support the reason why we should have never used these chemicals in habitat restoration.
That's That's powerful stuff. So we don't have to even ask Kim about whether or not the corporations are being responsible. It seems as if they're making strictly a financial calculation, and they're anticipating liability, and they're using their bean counters and their lawyers to maximize their profitability, and not thinking about the community at large as part of that responsibility. Would you generally agree with that? And then therefore it really falls to the agencies to do the right thing. And we're hoping that that whole spectrum is beginning to turn thanks to efforts of people like yourself.
Well, I think with Bear, I don't know how they sleep at night, but if you look at it from a purely business model standpoint, they're brilliant. They profit off chemicals that make us sick, and they also profit off the chemicals that we would need if we do get that phone call that we have cancer. So it's this closed loop system of hell.
Yes.
And what Bear's doing, I don't know if you guys have heard this, but they put out three almost identical bills, one in Iowa, one in Idaho, and one in Missouri. Thankfully, the one in Idaho, we worked to get that killed. Unfortunately, the one in Iowa has now passed the Senate, and the one in Missouri is their session has ended, so it's kind of in purgatory. But these bills would make it impossible. So if you're a farmer, if you're a landscape contractor, and if you get sick from exposure to glyphosate, then Bayer is protected. You would not be able to go after them in any way. And so this is like they're testing the waters. If they can get these bills forward, they plan on expanding it to 15 additional states.
I wonder how much money in lobbying costs that has cost them. I mean, that's just incredible.
They're
Well,
so organized, and we know their pattern. We've learned from them. We need to come up with a playbook that as is more effective than theirs. But they put out op-eds. They have a We know all of their tricks, you guys, and they're just
sure.
goofy.
It reminds me of vaccine companies in a way, Kim, where they're protected against any liability their vaccines may cause,
Right.
and that was the result of a major lobbying effort and a PR campaign. And we're not here to talk about vaccines, but I know, and similarly, how even way back when tobacco companies used to promote the notion that smoking was good for your health is it's just sounds a lot like that.
I know, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like DDT. We actually have that in our playbook because these chemicals were all marketed to us as safe. I mean, they used to apply DDT to nursery room wallpaper. And one of the parents we work with in Irvine, he's older, but he said that he remembers running behind the truck on a beach that was putting out the white DDT, and the kids loved running in it. If the government tells you it's safe, FDA, EPA, all of these folks, if they're constantly telling you it's safe, a lot of people trust that it's safe. You know, the talking points from industry, once we work with a school district, they'll tell you, well, we're only using Environmental Protection Agency registered herbicides. It's like, well, that doesn't mean anything. Because they don't even test for the, they don't test the chemicals at all. They have Bayer test the active, and they don't test the inert ingredients. They don't even know what the inert ingredients are because that is the company's secret sauce. It's proprietary information.
The fox guarding the
Kim,
hen house.
exactly. Yeah.
Hey, Kim, I wanted to ask you, speaking of Bayer, on your website, you have something about the Bayer Rewards program. It almost sounds like a frequent flyer program. Can you explain
Oh,
to us what that is?
it is very real reality that we heard about from different city staff, county staff that we've been working with. And they would ask us, have you heard about this cashback program? And when we tried to connect the dots on it, if you go to Bayer's website, they have one for agriculture where farmers can sign up and they get cash back based on purchasing these pesticides. It's done either by volume of the chemical or by acreage of their farm, their ranch. So we finally found, looking at pesticide usage reports, which is part of our process for a school district or a town, that they have increasingly been looking like they're more for a top 100 maintained golf course and not a school district based on the chemicals they're using, right? So if you're a school district and you have an athletic field, that's more of a high expectation site. So it might be more chemically dependent, or they might think that they need to have it more chemically dependent. But they were utilizing these chemicals on passive grass areas where the carpool would, it made no sense. So then we started looking up the label for the chemical and linking it back to this program, ENVU, ENVU. All former Bayer employees, they're headquartered in Cary, North Carolina, and they have this cashback program with Visa gift cards that when you sign up, and if you are a golf course superintendent, if you're purchasing materials, pesticides for school districts, for your own landscape company, you get a little calculator. And the more chemicals you purchase, you see your calculator of your Visa gift card amount go up. And it goes up to $5,000, and then you are issued another one. So it is a very unfortunate reality that incentivizes increased use of these chemicals. And chemicals where they're using Prosecutor, which is 41% glyphosate, so it qualifies as a Roundup concentrate around children for purely cosmetic reasons, for weed control, when they can use trimmers and organics instead. So it's really unfortunate, and we're working to shine a very bright spotlight on this program. And thankfully, in San Mateo County, just in time for Earth Day on Monday, we have a board of supervisor, Ray Mueller, who is a lawyer, and we shared this program with him, and he got it right away. He said, "Look, this is an example of good governance to safeguard public funds, because what's happening, you have San Mateo County award contracts to third-party contractors that purchase these materials. So ultimately, it's public funds that end up in these cashback programs." So he's made a commitment to utilize amending contracts. It's cheap. They all have lawyers on retainer anyway. So it's just they're amending staff contracts just to get that gray area removed. We don't have to worry about anybody being compromised, as well as the third party landscape and pest control contractors. Because pest control is another huge one, specifically with schools where they're a company, they're a business, they get paid more applications. So they're making preventative applications, meaning they are spraying insecticides in the classroom without any pest pressure, without any roaches, without any fire ants, vector control issue, because for them, it's just their business model.
Right. Yeah. Johnny.
It's incredible. These, like you mentioned, going just after the flowers, just for aesthetic reasons, dandelions, one of the best medicines out there that are natural. And then, this is just a cancer-causing agent that they're putting all over. It's wild. I was really impressed looking at some of your before and after pictures of what you guys were doing. Like you mentioned the sports fields and how, just in, wow, in like 2 months, how it could go from looking like, some grass at the end of a long dry summer to looking lush and green again. And I wanted to ask about some of those processes you're using to restore the soil. Is that kind of compost you're using to help get that fertility back?
It is. And again, with school districts, they usually don't have budgets that are as healthy as a municipality. So when we take soil samples, I swear by the Haney test, and it was great to actually meet the man who created that program, because it shows if there is a nitrogen pool, what we can use already at the source, with the goal of not having to intervene much at all. So once we get baseline data on the health of the soil, the organic matter, compaction, then we're able to come up with a way to inoculate the soil. It's fun because it's so much of it is just worm castings. There's so many simple things that you can do to heal the soil. And it's very cost effective. And it's, again, something that the chemical industry doesn't want people to know about. Now that people know what we do, SiteOne is a big distributor, a chemical distributor. And again, they're a business and they are supposed to maintain the purchase orders at the same rate and increase that rate of these purchase orders. And while they have expanded their organic portfolio, most of what they're selling is exactly what we're working to ban in the parks and playgrounds and at your neighbor's home. We want businesses to do well, but they don't have to do well at the expense of public health and the environment. Bayer has such an amazing research and development departments and funding that they can create solutions for healing the soil instead of creating herbicides that create the perfect breeding ground for future weed pressure and weeds. It's
Right.
demand. So if we can educate people on demanding safer products and inputs, then I think that's really how we'll see the market shift.
Kim, on that point, I have a question because since you're the focus of non-toxic neighborhoods, you primarily are doing schools and parks, but especially in Florida, we have all of these big condo developments where they're spraying everywhere in apartment buildings. Have you found success that when someone and I wanted to ask you also if you could name like a few cities where you've had some really big successes with your organization working with local city governments. But say, for example, I know Johnny and I are both going to be working with you shortly to try to get these chemicals out of our own cities, and you're going to kind of walk us through this process. But once we start doing that, have you found that, if I can get this stuff out of my city and then go to my condo HOA and get my neighbors involved and say, look, all this stuff is being banned in the city parks. Don't you think it's about time we stop paying these landscapers to poison themselves and poison us? Have you found that it sort of, your organization is like the first step and then it sort of ripples out to other places like private property?
Well, the good news is we were lucky enough to have Jane Goodall put a quote out in support of our work. And I got to even drink with her. She drank whiskey. It was a very hard morning the next day. But in working with her, she really helped expand people's knowledge on this issue. So we were contacted from, I mean, we have a non-toxic Malta. Like, we have a lot of presence in New Zealand and Australia right now. So, to help that effort, we came up with a playbook. So, we have a playbook to help anyone in their pesticide ban reduction journey. So, there's one specifically for homeowners associations that you touched on to, what do I do with my neighbor who, loves all things Roundup? Then we have one for school districts and one for municipalities. So it's just to empower people and to provide them all of the tools. Because again, when we started, I had no idea what the process was. And working with all of these different groups now, we provide the research, the talking points, policy examples, and then just a support system. So, like with Palm Beach, they have been great. We have an elected official that shares how this is the most positive thing that she's ever brought forward. And every time she sees children in the park, dogs rolling around eating the grass, she just said it's the best feeling and the reason why she wanted to become an elected official. And then we also have their golf course superintendent that has been great to work with. And he's someone that I send anytime there's any organic tech or product, we have folks that test them out for us. Because again, we always want to get product donations and tech donated to any city school district working on this. So just to have the support system of if a city's going online, like we're working in Kansas, it's the first, we're working in Overland Park, Kansas. They have 88 parks. There's no, they'll be the first in the state of Kansas, but in other states, there's multiple areas. So you can go on site visits, talk to staff. Staff provides support that, yes, this does work. Because the narrative from the distributors and the chemical industry is not going to be accurate. And if you ask them to ever provide their source information, you know, because they'll usually say that organic management is 3 to 4 times higher. So when you say, okay, provide where are you getting that from? They can't. You know, they don't want integrated pest management policies also to include historical data anymore. Because if you look at the historical data of a conventionally maintained baseball field versus what we can do, they can't afford anyone to see that we could do it at the same cost in the next year, significantly lower. On after you heal the soil and you're not adding pre-emergent selective herbicides and everything else.
It
I hope
sounds
that
like
helped.
it sounds like public spaces are a particularly vulnerable area here because if a county, if a government official is allowing it's harder to have any repercussions for that. So, you're not going to have, I mean, people, if people do it on their own private property, it's a choice that they make, right? But on public places, there's no recourse. And until now, until you've come along and raised the red flag here, and we're not talking here about taking away companies' profitability or saying you're evil, although we may think privately that there's a sinister objective here. I don't, but that's not where we're coming from. We're saying the reality is, Kim, and you know this, I'm sure. People in this country, in the United States, are dying sooner, where our lifespans are shortening. So we can talk about the different species and all of the, all of these. I think you said 93% were have been affected negatively by glyphosate. That's scary enough. But when our children, when we're exchanging our health and years of our lives for the coffers of these corporations, well, I'm going to say that that's a problem we need to address. And fundamentally, I believe it's a political problem that needs a political solution. That's where I come from there.
And we always say that this needs and needs to be and should be a nonpartisan issue. You know, I mean, everyone who takes an oath to protect public health and safety needs
Right.
to understand what the consequences are of these chemicals. And in Aliso Viejo, there are a bunch of residents that went and got lab work done that showed a direct correlation between the chemicals, glyphosate, that they were utilizing on the hillside behind their homes and what's in their system. So now Great Plains Labs shows there are consequences. And that's what we want city staff and elected officials to be made aware of, is that there are very real consequences to these chemicals. And like you said, when you use something at your home, that's your decision. But if a city is using chemicals in their parks and they're not providing pesticide posting notifications, then you are robbed of the ability to make an educated decision as to what you're going to be exposed to, what your children and pets are going to be exposed to. And that's not
Exactly.
acceptable.
And that reminds me of a lot of the, some of the food intake that people in, let's say, less economically advantaged communities are, I don't know if you can go so far as to say that they're forced to eat fast food, but, there are very few options available to them, like organic, food and so forth. So these people are being, so essentially, they have no real option but to eat the food that has been maximized for profit. And I think there's a lot of poisonous impact there as well. So and so they're not really making an informed choice either. And frankly, they're ingesting poison,
Yeah, the food desert thing is real, and it's something where you the glyphosate levels in food, the glyphosate levels even in organic wine, that was very depressing. It's just it's something where its persistence in our environment is so high. The least we can do is get it out of where it's being utilized for purely cosmetic reasons. In the urban landscape. We've also worked with golf courses. That's usually, it happens if they have a municipal course like Palm Beach. But now you have Palm Beach, the golf course superintendent was so excited that they're keeping bees now. They're selling honey in the pro shop. So we want it to be a positive shift. We want everyone, including the producers, to do well. Like from a
Sure.
fiscal standpoint, everyone can do well. And then on the HOA part, Brandon, I totally forgot to share is that it increases property value. So there is no real reason not to move in this direction unless you financially benefit from, selling these chemicals.
Kim, you just gave me the solution right now. Instead of the Bayer rewards cards, they're going to be selling their organic honey from parks and golf courses, and they can make more doing that
There you
than their
go.
Bayer
I don't know if
rewards
they can make
cards.
that much.
Win
I wish. Get on.
win.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Kim,
that's great.
Johnny and I are really looking forward to working with your organization to figure out what we're going to do. Would you be willing to come back in, I don't know, a month or two and maybe kind of update our audience on how Johnny and I are doing trying to get this done in our cities, and maybe you can help other people if they want to start this process.
Absolutely. We'd be happy to. And it's easy. It's just the first step, which we have already done, is pull the pesticide usage reports for 1 year. So we understand what pest pressure your city has. So that way, when we request our first meeting with staff, we always try to work with staff first, is to share all of the alternatives that they can utilize. So, from the first meeting, we try to keep it very positive and focused on who doesn't benefit from safer parks. We want every child, regardless of zip code, to be able to go to their park and not be exposed to these carcinogens that bioaccumulate in their little systems.
And what is the best way for someone, let's just say, you're in any normal neighborhood in middle America and you're 3 blocks from a park and you don't know what that park is doing, and you want to find out, is that the way they go about it, to go to their own town and acquire those usage reports and then present them to you, Kim? Is that how it works?
Yep, we have the community outreach team that helps look at all of those boring labels that come in so many different ways when they share that with us. And every city's website is different. So if you just go to Google, type in your city name and public records request, then that will take you to the page where you can fill out the request that you would like the total list of pesticides utilized in calendar year 2023. They have 10 business days. They can ask for an extension, but within 10 business days, they usually will get you that information. And then we review the list and we provide all of the alternatives. And depending on how comfortable the person working on this is, we offer to join the initial meeting with them to answer any questions, provide examples. And then if it's adversarial in any way, which, normally it's not, but if it's at the county level or we need additional muscle, we will reach out to our non-toxic neighborhood advisors who have been so helpful. I can't wait for you guys to meet Bruce Lamphere. He's been helping us since 2015, and he's just, I mean, a real life superhero. I always tell him I want to get him a cape. I mean, he literally works around the clock to protect children from environmental toxins.
That sounds exciting. And if he's Batman, then you're Batgirl. We'll give you
Oh, I'll
that
take
one. Okay.
Hey, Paul,
And
should we ask people like our listeners to write into our Gmail if they have any questions that for next time when we have Professor Lanfear and Kim
that's an
back?
excellent idea, Brenda. It's curators24, curators, the number 24, at gmail.com. And we would love to get flooded with inquiries and then be able to present that information over to Kim. We're talking about what feels a lot like an existential threat risk to communities across this country. And I just want to go back to something you touched on at the beginning, and I know Johnny talks about this too, is how this is a fairly unique condition here in the United States, and you're sharing experience about Bermuda, and then coming back here and sort of having this experience of where the problems are in this country. That speaks volumes, and that's why I call it a political problem, Kim, because it has to be a political problem.
Our regulatory system is so broken, and that's why a lot of folks refer to the Environmental Protection Agency as the Ecocide Protection Agency. They have yes packages on certain pesticides, and ultimately what people need to know is that the signal words that the EPA allocates to these chemicals do not equate to safety. Roundup has caution, dicamba has caution, 2,4-D has caution, and that is, other than 25B, that is what they deem, the safest. As long as you follow the label, that it's safe. And that's not the case, especially because they're not testing the inert ingredients. So they're allowing products to go to market, end up at, Target's shelves, and the chemicals in that product have never been tested for safety.
Well, on top of that, we talk about Monsanto. They're owned by Big Pharma. They're owned by Bayer now. And, this industry has been fined, 80 some billion dollars for criminal penalties for fraud in just the last 15 years. So, they're not above doing faulty science and fraudulent science. And Monsanto has been caught ghostwriting this science, just kind of telling their scientists what they want the studies to show. And we've seen those emails in the Monsanto papers. So yeah, it's beyond the pale, really, what we're seeing. I wanted to ask, where I am, we have these waterways, these canals in South Florida that they'll actually spray with glyphosate and these different herbicides. And then we have neighborhoods that are hooked into those waterways to use as their sprinklers. So you're talking about those exposures there, getting on the lawns that way. Is that something that you guys have had experience encountering or engaging with?
Yes, so they, again, the chemical industry is looking to sell as many chemicals as possible, right? That's where they make their profit. So with duckweed and other issues with algae, they always have a chemical solution. And we have found amazing technology. And that's our goal, is that we want organic regen solutions to be so cool that you forget they're also organic. And with that, we have a solar powered weeding robot. It's like a Roomba for waterways, and it's amazing. And we have the EPA testing them out in Okeechobee right now. It's solar powered. It takes care of the duckweed. It takes care of algae. But the best part, the most random part, it's also solar powered, is it just becomes part of the ecosystem, and it's cost positive, which sounds crazy. So the pulling in the algae, the output is paraffin. So a lot of universities have started utilizing this, and the students are selling the paraffin. So it's just like a win across the board. The unit in Rutgers, and Rutgers, by the way, land grant universities, that's a whole nother conversation because they receive most of their funding from the chemical industry. But Rutgers has a really beautiful organic program where they're training landscape contractors and other folks on organic management. But they tested this unit that became part of the ecosystem. It was struck by lightning and it kept chugging. It kept going. So it's just like set it and forget it with minimal maintenance. And if you're looking at labor costs, spraying all of these waterways and lagoons has, again, so many unintended negative consequences that people have to be held accountable for. They have to understand what they're doing and look for other options. So
Yes.
technology like this is exactly what we can utilize instead.
Nature has, I'm quoting from our prior podcast, has innovation, diversity, creativity, abundance, resilience, all of those qualities. And there's abundance for all of us if we don't if we don't screw it up.
Right.
You know?
We have to stop screwing up. Yes. We want
Yeah.
everybody to make a living, but not at the expense of harming others.
That's exactly right. Wow.
Perfect.
That might be a good place to leave it, Kim. You're so kind to be with us, and I can't wait to learn more, get involved, and be supportive of your efforts, non-toxic neighborhoods. And is that your website, nontoxicneighborhoods.org?
Yep, and we're on
Mm-hmm.
Instagram. We definitely, and Bruce Lanfear will also ping me if we're not doing enough updates. But we've been so focused on the work, but we like to share updates. And we just got a ban in Douglas County, Colorado, which is the most conservative area, which shows this is nonpartisan. A ban on all Roundup and glyphosate at the county level, and they're working to adopt organic county management. So it's just nice having wins and all of this kind of really heavy time that we're living in right now.
You mentioned the film Kiss the Ground earlier, and there's a sequel out now called
Common
Common
Ground.
Ground, right? And I just that phrase popped into my head when you were talking about how this is a nonpartisan issue, as it should be, right? Yeah.
Right. I mean, it has to be. And we all know what we need, and it's just hopefully this election will bring about real change, and we can start having a system that community stakeholders and parents and pet owners have as much access to elected officials as special interests. Right now, it's so lopsided. That's the hardest part. Robin Williams had a great quote where he said, working with elected officials, he wished it was more like NASCAR, where they'd have on their jackets who sponsors them. So,
Right.
who not to waste their time with.
Right.
That is so good.
Right. Thank you, Kim. We really look forward to having you back with us.
Yeah,
Thank
thanks,
you guys.
Kim.